This evening we're going to go back a little bit. We finished up with the destruction of the 10 tribes, and I kind of left off on a couple of kings. So let me just read the review. That's a little loud tonight. On the very top there, I'll just read through that real quick. We studied Jehoshaphat's son, Jehoram, and his grandson, Ahaziah, while we were studying the life of Jehu and his destruction of Ahab's house. So these two kings were closely aligned with both Ahab and Jezebel. Jehoram married one of Jezebel's daughters, Athaliah. The first thing Jehoram did when he became king was kill all his brothers. He continued in this wickedness and was so wicked, God struck him with an incurable disease of his intestines, from which he died when his intestines actually came out. He was only a king for 8 years. His son, Ahaziah, only reigned 1 year before he was killed by Jehu while on the way to visit Ahab. After Ahaziah's death, Jezebel's daughter Athaliah killed all her grandchildren and began to reign as queen. I think we remember that. I just wanted to kind of get everybody back on the same page as we now start back. And we're going to continue with the kings of Judah until the end of the, to the 70-year captivity. So let's go ahead and I'll start at the front tonight. Cameron, you want to read that first verse there?
Now when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the royal heirs to the house of Judah. But Jehoshabeth, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's sons who were being murdered, and put him in a nurse in a bedroom. So Jehoshabeth, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she did not kill him. And he was hidden with them in the house of God for 6 years, while Athaliah reigned over the land.
Okay, so here we have our main characters for this evening. And you can see them in that first box in the very middle of the page there. We have really four main characters. The first character, and she doesn't stay in the story very long, but that's Athaliah. She was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So this is how the kingdom of Judah was infected by the wickedness of Ahab and his household, and it's also why Jehoram was put to death. He too was a son in the sense of Ahab. He was directly tied to Ahab. So Athaliah is the wife of Jehoram and the mother of Ahaziah, and we're going to change the name of Joshabeth. For some reason, they have that word in 2 Chronicles. In 2 Kings, it's much easier. It's Jehosheba. So we'll use Jehosheba. Okay, so Jehosheba is the daughter of Jehoram and Athaliah. So she is the sister of Ahaziah, who has just been put to death. And she is the wife of Jehoiada the priest. Okay, so we have Athaliah, and now we have her daughter. I guess it would be her daughter, the daughter of Jehoram and Athaliah. Then we have Joash or Jehoash, and again, for some reason in Chronicles it has Joash, and in Kings it has Jehoash. And so he is the son of Jehoram and the last of the seed of David in that line. And then finally we have Jehoiada. And it's kind of difficult. I'll let you make the decision. And I spent some time this afternoon, and nobody really would give me an answer as to whether he is the high priest or whether he's just the priest. So we can kind of make that decision. I'm really, at this point, leaning toward him being the high priest because of several things that we'll look at here in just a few moments. But these are our main characters. And so as the story unfolds of the life of Joash, we will be dealing with these cross currents. And so he is hidden for 7 years. And where is he hidden?
Temple.
Okay, in the house of God or in the temple. Who's that remind us of? Who else was raised in the temple?
Samuel.
Actually, it was, Samuel. Wasn't the temple, though, was it? It was the tabernacle. So Jehoiada and Josheba have basically taken him in and are raising him, I suspect, as their son. So he is 7 years old when he becomes king, and he's hidden for 7 years. So how old is he when this event occurs?
Born.
Yeah, he's just born. He's just an infant, a tiny infant. And the situation is very quickly unfolding. Athaliah hears about the death of her son. She decides to do what? She's going to do what we call today a coup, right? She's going to kill all of the offspring. Now, somebody had already started it. You remember when Jehoram took the throne, who did he kill? He killed all of his brothers. So when he died, Athaliah figures, well, I'll just kill all my grandchildren, and then I can be the queen. So, but do we have a lot of natural affection here? One guy's killing all of his brothers, the next woman is killing all of her grandchildren, and again, this is all coming from Ahab and Jezebel, because that's the influence. Athaliah's mother was Jezebel. So she was raised in that household, and she got to see firsthand how her mother dealt with all these things, and she kind of, I think, went the same direction. So he's just an infant. His aunt, I guess she would be, picks him up with the nurse and hides them in a room and then takes them to the temple. And Jehoiada and Josheba, as I say, I don't know that I could say they're mother and father to him, but they certainly are close with him. Okay, in the seventh year, and it's really interesting, you know, sometimes you'll read about a king and there's only three or four verses about the king. Well, here we've got almost 40 verses just on how Jehoash becomes king and how they destroy Athaliah. We're not going to read all of this. I think what we'll do is we'll just read... let's read the second one at the very bottom. They're both basically the same thing. One's in Kings, one's in Chronicles, but the one in Kings has a few more, a little more information in it. I'm sorry, in Chronicles. Where are we? Ken, you want to read that? Starting with verse 2 there at the bottom.
Oh, okay. And they went throughout Judah and gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah and the chief fathers of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. All the people shall be in the courts of the house of the Lord, but no one... come into the house of the Lord, except the priests and those of the Levites who serve. They may go in, for they are holy, but all the people shall keep the watch of the Lord. And the Levites shall surround the king on all sides, every man with his weapons in his hand. And whoever comes into the house, let him be put to death.
Okay, so Jehoiada sends out messengers all through Judah. He gets all the, what we might call the faithful man, the people that he trusts, the people that he knows will help him in this endeavor. Because if Joash is killed, what do we have left? See, there's nobody left. I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't somebody of the line of David somewhere, but there wasn't anybody of the line of David in direct descendant from the kings. There might have been a brother who had a son, but that's not what they want. So this man is very critical to the continuation of God's promises to Israel. And of course, although we don't have to worry about that because God's going to take care of it, still, do we want to be pretty meticulous about our part in it all? So you can't just say, well, God's going to take care of it, so I'm not going to worry too much about it. The reality is, he's very meticulous. If you read the accounts of Kings and Chronicles together, you see that he's just very methodical. He makes them swear an oath. He brings them to Jerusalem. He tells them all of these things. And then, I think maybe the most important thing, where's all this going to happen? Inside of the temple. Now, who can come inside of the temple?
Levites.
Only the priests and Levites. So, that no one come into the house of the Lord except the priests and those of the Levites who serve. So if anyone comes into the temple, what can we do? I mean, we know right away they shouldn't be here because only the Levites and the priests should be here. So what does he say to do? Whoever comes to the house, put them to death. Because that's how critical this is. So Athaliah has created an environment in which these kind of things had to be done. So very quickly, the king is brought out, he is anointed, and everything is put in place. I'm sorry, Jeff?
No, well, that's okay. Finish your sentence.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you used a word earlier that for what Athaliah had done.
No.
A coup. Well, that's what they're, in some ways, doing here again.
Right, they're reversing the coup.
It's
with another coup.
It is a coup or a reverse coup, whatever. But if they're caught by the queen... with any sort of vulnerability, well, her track record indicates she's going to take care of the situation. So, yeah, meticulous planning for this, what she would call treason.
Right.
Yeah, or does call later.
And we have no idea, I mean, what kind of mercenaries this woman has hired and what kind of intrigues are going on in the palace. And, I mean, you can just imagine with the wickedness that it was just it must have been a terrible situation. A lot of bad things are going on. And so Jehoiada makes a covenant. Let's go ahead and read that verse. Carl, you want to read that for us? 2 Kings 11, 17 and 18.
Then Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord, the king, and the people, that they should be the Lord's people, and also between the king and the people. And all the people of the land went to the temple of Baal and tore it down. They thoroughly broke in pieces its altars and images, and killed Mattan, the priest of Baal, before the altars.
Okay, so caught up in the moment. And the reason I say that is because as soon as Jehoiada dies, what do they quickly do? They go right back into idolatry. And when one of Jehoiada's sons is sent as a prophet, the king commands what? Put him to death. So when you see that happen later, does it kind of give you maybe a little cynical attitude about what's going on here? In other words, when you see maybe what, 20 years later, everything's undone and everything goes back the way it was. And so that's why I say I think the people were just caught up in the emotion of the moment. Because as soon as Jehoiada dies, the king, all the leaders come to the king and say, look, we want to go back to Baal. And immediately they all go back to Baal. So that tells us that they weren't really happy with the service to God. But at this point in time, getting rid of Athaliah and bringing the kingdom back into a much more reasonable and proper way that things should be done, he makes a covenant. There's two separate covenants here. The first one is between the Lord, the king, and the people. So this is a covenant between the Lord and the king and the Lord and the people. What's the second covenant? Between the king and the people. So there, what do we call fealty? They're swearing an oath of fealty to the king. And what about to the Lord? Well, we're going to be faithful. So he made a covenant. Now, covenants were generally sealed with the death of an animal. We don't really know exactly how Jehoiada did this, but he required them to make promises. That's what a covenant is. When we are baptized, are we making a covenant with God? Yeah, and baptism is the sign of that covenant. We are circumcised with a circumcision made without hands. And, of course, circumcision back then was also a covenant, but this was a different covenant. This was a covenant which, again, they were very quickly to break. But at this time, verse 18, all the people of the land went to the temple of Baal. What did they do? Baal, what did they do? First they tore it down. Then what did they do? Thoroughly broke in pieces, its altars and images. And then they killed the priest between the altars. So that's it for Baal worship, right? No, unfortunately, that's it for the ostentatious or the open worship of Baal, but what's going on in people's hearts? And again, the only reason we know that is because what's going to happen later. Okay, so at the age of 7, Joash starts his 40-year reign. And it says something that, again, kind of clues you in. So, Jeff, you want to read that for us?
2 Chronicles?
Yeah.
Okay. In the 7th year of Jehu, Jehoash became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Ziba of Beersheba. Jehoash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of which Jehoiada the priest instructed him.
Okay, so what's the implication there?
He was only doing it because of the priest.
Okay, so, you know, evil companionship corrupts good morals. What does good companionship do? And so as long as Jehoiada was around, this man was able to conquer his weaknesses. And I guess we can give him the benefit of the doubt. I think a lot of people want to serve God. They just don't have the inner capability of doing it. And if someone can help them, they can stay faithful. Unfortunately, if that person's gone, what happens? And I think this happens sometimes in husband-wife relationships because when we marry, one person, of course, is stronger than the other person, and that other person, or one side or the other, keeps the family going in the right direction. When one of them dies and the other one falls away, do you get some kind of an indication that maybe they weren't as strong? or something happened. That's why you have to be careful, because we don't know the hidden things of heart. But I know through the years that I've found that's the case, that sometimes one or the other is very strong spiritually, and their influence is very strong spiritually, and they tend to put forth such a good effort that the person who maybe isn't as strong is going to go ahead and go along with it. Now, whether Joash was never servant to the Lord but just pretending, or whether he actually was a servant of the Lord, is something we won't know until the judgment day. But as long as Jehoiada was there instructing him, he did what was right. And unfortunately, as soon as Jehoiada dies, he starts worshiping Baal. I mean, it's not like you just slowly quit serving God. It's like somebody whose wife dies and the next week they marry somebody from a denomination and they're going to the Episcopalian church. What does that tell you? You know, something wasn't quite right, right? People don't do that. They don't just do that in a short period of time. Okay, so we only have one event recorded about Joash's reign, and it has to do with rebuilding the temple. Temple's getting old. We're quite a ways into the kings now, and so the temple's getting old, and we all know what happens when you don't maintain things. What happens? They start falling apart. And so, and not only that, but this next verse here. Richard, do you want to read that for us?
Was it 2 Kings?
Yeah, Second Chronicles 24:7.
Okay. Well, the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken into the house of God and had also presented all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord to Baal.
Okay, so all the dedicated things would be what? You remember David would dedicate silver and gold to the temple, and it would go into the temple. So now a lot of that stuff was gone, because every time a king would come in wanting to conquer, what would the king of Judah do? He'd go to the temple and he'd take all the dedicated things and he'd give them. It's kind of interesting how that works. They're always willing to give God's things away. And so they do. But in this case, the temple was broken into, which obviously would require, I mean, if your home's broken into, is there things you have to fix later? So they break down the door, they break a window, or they do something. So they broke into the house, and they took all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord to the Baal. So what's in the temple right now? Well, pretty much nothing. And it's in a state of disrepair. It's in a state of being run down. And of course, do you want the temple of the Lord to look run down when you're coming there once a year or three times a year for your sacrifices? It just doesn't. I mean, considering the splendor that they had before. Okay, so let's go ahead and where are we? Diane, would you read 2 Chronicles 24:4-5?
Now it happened after this that Joash set his heart on repairing the house of the Lord. Then he gathered the priests and the Levites and said to them, "Go out to the cities of Judah and gather from all Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year, and see that you do it quickly." However, the Levites did not do it quickly.
Okay, so this is kind of like the go into all the world and preach the gospel, except what's their command? Go into all Judah and collect money. So he's turned the priests into what? Well, they're out cold calling. They're out going out trying to get money. And is that something all men are just really fired up to go do? Go out and help ask people for money? So they didn't quite get to it. Now, here's the next, the one in Kings, it words it a little differently. Martha, you want to read that, please?
And Jehoash said to the priest, "All the money of the dedicated gifts that are brought into the house of the Lord, each man's census money, each man's assessment money, and all the money that a man purposes in his heart to bring into the house of the Lord, let the priests take it themselves, each from his constituency." No, I lost my place. "And let them repair the damages of the temple wherever any dilapidation is found."
Okay, so we see what kind of states the temple in?
Dilapidated.
Repair the damages, it's dilapidated, it's just run down. Now you kind of think, well, how can stone get run down? But it isn't just stone. I mean, what happens to brass over time?
Tarnish.
It starts to tarnish, and it doesn't. And man, doesn't it? Isn't it? Doesn't it turn green, or is that copper? I don't know if brass turns green or not. Okay, well, forget that then. They didn't have any green copper. okay, and you know, the thing that kind of troubled me a little bit about what he asked the priests to do here is, what about their money? Where is their money coming from? The priests and the Levites. Okay, it's coming from the people. And so if they're not bringing in very much money, then what are the priests going to be tempted to do? Because isn't that what people bringing money is supposed to be for? To take care of the priests? So I'm not sure here. As I point out in some of the things that I've written, it's kind of hard to know if the king is asking the priest in part to pay for the renovations of the temple. Is that fair? For the priests to have to give up their income so that the temple can be restored?
No.
No, that's not what's supposed to be. So, now, and some of this, no. I mean, the census money and the man's assessment money, but all the money that a man purposes in his heart to bring into the house of the Lord, normally, what did God say that was for? In other words, God told them every dedicated thing and every vowed thing and every firstborn and all the sacrifices, whose are they? Those belong to the priest. So now here this guy comes in. Well, I've dedicated my money that I was going to offer to the Lord as devotion, which should have been yours, but now I'm going to give it to the temple. Well, what are the priests going to think about that? So at any rate, it just didn't get done. And so let's go ahead and turn to page 3. And you wonder why he let it go so long. But then we don't know exactly whether it started in his first year or later. But let's see, where are we? Laura, you want to read that? 2 Kings 12:6-8.
Now it was so, by the 23rd year of the king Joash, that the priest had not repaired the damages of the temple. So King Joash called Jehoiada the priest and other priests and said to them, "Why have you not repaired the damages of the temple? Now, therefore, do not take more money from your constituency, but deliver it for the repairing the damages of the temple." And the priest agreed that they would neither receive more money from the people nor repair the damages of the temple.
Okay, so what did they agree to here? We won't take any more, but
we won't do anything either.
We're not giving back what we got. And again, I'm not sure whether the blame should go to Joash or whether the blame should go to the priest. Because you can't really figure out here. I mean, obviously, if the king is telling the priests, we want you to give up all of your income in order for the temple to be restored, is that fair? On the other hand, if the priests are taking money that should be used for the temple and they're keeping it for their own needs, well, what do we call that?
Stealing.
See that? Yeah, stealing. Misappropriation of funds. For some reason, though, I mean, when it's all said and done, we're going to keep everything we've gotten for the last so many years, but we won't take any more. Well, a new way is then devised. Ray, you want to read that, please? I don't have a citation, but it's under "A New Way Was Devised."
Okay. Then at the king's command, they made a chest and set it outside at the gate of the house of the Lord. And they made a proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the collection that Moses, the servant of God, had imposed on Israel in the wilderness. Then all the leaders and all the people rejoiced, brought their contributions, and put them into the chest until all had given.
Okay. So if they'd only thought of that chest in the beginning, right? I mean, it's just kind of the way things are. If you tell somebody, this is everything that goes into this box is going for this thing, then when people bring it and it goes into that, it's kind of like Paul. When Paul said, all the money that you give to me when I get ready to go to Jerusalem is going where? To the needy saints in Jerusalem. So I know, I trust Paul, and Paul said it's going to the needy saints in Jerusalem. So if I want to help needy saints in Jerusalem, do I have confidence to give that money? But, you know, we know a lot. I remember back, it's probably been a long time, United Way used to be a charitable organization that people really thought was doing a lot of good things. And then as time went by, they started finding out where that money was going. And pretty soon, what were Christians saying? I don't want my money going there. You know, it was going for things that they didn't know. And so when people ask you to give and you know what it's going for, then you're a lot more apt to do it. And that's a good example here. And again, we see that in the first century from time to time. And I've known of congregations that'll do that if they're going to have the building. And we're on Sunday, we want everyone to bring. We're going to have something here. We want everybody to bring money for the building. And of course, that doesn't interfere with the contributions they're having for the work of the church. This is something specifically designed to help build a building. And brethren will rise to that occasion. I've seen it over and over again. I'm sure you have as well. So the people are really excited about this. It says in verse 10, they rejoiced. Well, why did it take 23 years?
Because he didn't tell them.
Well, apparently the priests didn't get the message out. And apparently Jehoash, something slipped through the cracks. But at the king's command, they made the chest. They put it outside at the gate of the house of the Lord. And they told everybody, this chest is here. Here's what it's going to be used for. Well, everybody wants a temple to be beautiful, so they all brought that money. Okay, where are we? Jean, you want to read 2 Chronicles 24:11, please?
Okay, so it was at that time when the chest was brought to the king's officials by the hand of the Levites, and when they saw that there was much money, that the king's scribes and the high priest officers came and emptied the chest and took it and returned it to its place. Thus they did day by day and gathered money in abundance.
Okay, so did this work? Yeah, it worked above and beyond what they would hope for. And so then we get a little glimpse as to what that money was used for. Bertha, you want to read that for us? 24:12-14.
Sure. The king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord. And they hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord. And also those who worked in iron and bronze to restore the house of the Lord. So the workmen labored, and the work was completed by them. They restored the house of God to its original condition and reinforced it. When they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada. They made from it articles for the house of the Lord, articles for serving and offering, spoons and vessels of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada.
Okay, so we get a real clear picture here. It must have been a very exciting time for these people. But remember, it starts in the 23rd year of Joash's reign. How long does he reign? 40 years. So we're 17 years away from some terrible events, but we don't know how soon before that 40-year period. We just know that's when he died. But we're running quickly aground because Jehoiada's death is coming. And even in this particular passage, if you notice that very first line, they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually. When?
All the days of Jehoiada.
Now, it would have been nice if it had said all the days of Jehoash, but it doesn't. It says all the days of Jehoiada. So again, Jehoiada is a very powerful character. Matter of fact, how old is he when he dies? Anybody remember? 130. So if he's 130, then he's about 100 when all these events are taking place with Joash and setting things up. So he's kind of following in the steps of Moses, because Moses didn't start till he was quite old. Okay, so unfortunately, as I say, Jehoiada dies. So Vera, could you read that, please? 2 Chronicles 24:15.
But Jehoiada grew old and was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died, and they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done good in Israel, both towards God and his house.
Okay, so they buried him among the kings. So what was the feeling about Jehoiada?
Good
man, did a lot of good things. But before they threw the last bit of dirt on his grave, what are they doing? Of course, they didn't use dirt. I guess they buried some of them. This was probably in stone. But as soon as he dies, here's where we go. George, you want to read that for us, 2 Chronicles 24:17?
Now, after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. Therefore, they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served wooden images and idols, and wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespass. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord, and they testified against them, but they would not listen.
Okay, so again, after the death of Jehoiada, it may not have been the next day, it might have been the next week, or it might have been 6 months, but at some point after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king. Now, nothing is said, but as soon as that bowing is over and the king listens, what do? They start bowing down to idols. So what is it? What's the request that the leaders have brought to the king?
We want to worship the
old gods. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. We want to worship.
That they wanted to worship the way that they did before.
Okay. And of course, it always comes down to one thing. And Paul hits this, I think, in 1 Timothy or 2 Timothy chapter 4. And that is, when you have desires and lusts, and you want to give those, you want to give in to those desires and lusts, and as a Christian you can't do it, what's the temptation? You'll find a denomination, right? We'll find a church that will allow us to do what we want to do. We want to serve God. We just want to enjoy these lusts as well. Well, that never worked for Israel because you couldn't do it. I mean, the Ten Commandments were very clear. If you bow down to another god, that's a death penalty offense. So they had to leave God completely in order to worship their idols, which is exactly what they did in verse 18. They left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served wooden images and idols. Now, this is exactly what Rehoboam did. I think I made this point quite a few weeks ago, and that is that Solomon builds this beautiful temple, and he reigns for 40 years. And when he dies, what does Israel do? Well, the 10 tribes, did they ever go to that house? No, they never went there. And what did Judah do? They started worshiping idols. So within 40 years of building this beautiful temple, it's empty. Nobody's there. Nobody's worshiping God there. So having a beautiful temple, having a beautiful building, is that going to make people faithful? No, it just doesn't work that way. So the leaders of Judah bow to the king, plead with the king, and the king listens to them. And it may be he's just not a very strong character, because when Jehoiada's there, he listens to him. Now that these leaders are here, he's listening to them. But he obviously doesn't have a lot of what we would call intestinal fortitude. He doesn't seem to have much root or much conviction. So and again, you're kind of torn. I wonder how bad this guy really is. But then the next event just kind of seals it. So let's see, where are we? Pauline, would you read verse 20, please? Down at the bottom.
Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest, who stood above the people and said to them, "Thus saith the God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he also has forsaken you." So they conspired against him, and at the command of the God, king, they stoned him and with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him, who killed his son, and as he died, he said, "The Lord look upon it and repay."
Okay, so what does this tell us about the character of Joash?
He's not neutral.
Yeah, he it isn't just a weakness. I mean, I don't care how much he might be pushed by these people to do something wrong. For him, I mean, what would have happened to him if I can't think of her name. Let's go back to the right front here. Jehosheba. Jehosheba is the wife of Jehoiada. So this is her son that he's killing. Now, Jehoshaphat is the person who saved his life. He was going to be put to death. She saved his life. Then she brings him into the temple, and she and Jehoiada, they take care of him until he's 7 years old. And then the father guides him and helps him and takes care of him. And now, what does it say? He killed his son. And he didn't remember the kindness which Jehoiada, his father, had done to him. So, what does that tell us about his character? I mean, that's below despicable. I mean, it's one thing, and we've all seen it. People will do things that are terrible. But when you do something like this, it just tells us the kind of character. And again, we don't know if he was always that way or if this is just what happens when you start worshiping idols like he did. And the other thing, and I ran out of time this evening. I wanted to do it. Maybe you guys can look into it also. In Luke, Jesus says, the blood of all the prophets from Abel to Zechariah, the only problem, because everything fits here, except here it's the son of Jehoiada and there it's the son of Berechiah. And I had enough time to look at five or six different books. Nobody touched it. I was thinking, why don't you at least tell me whether this is the same guy or not? But nobody did, and then I didn't have time to pursue it. So I'm going to do that later, because I'd like to know if this is the Zechariah that Jesus is talking about, and because he does perish between at the temple, just like it says here. He perished at the stones, with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Now, the other interesting thing here, and I guess this is the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament, but does he die the same way Stephen did? Stephen said, Lord, do not lay this
to their charge.
And what does this guy say? Hey, look on charge. It. Now, which one's right?
Get him, God.
Yeah, which one's right? I mean, aren't they both right?
Yeah.
I mean, would it be wrong for you to say, God's vengeance, I hope God's vengeance punishes you for what you're doing? If you say, forgive them, they don't know what they do, like Jesus did, is that harder to say? Yeah. So, again, it's. I guess it depends on your spirituality, because if you think about it, was Jesus saying, "Father, I want you to forgive all these people for what they're doing"? No, he wasn't saying that. He was saying, "Father, I want these people to get the chance to repent and be forgiven." And I think that. And I don't think that Zechariah here is not thinking that same thing. It's just kind of your perspective. We'll see this a lot when we get into the prophecies about the death of Jesus and how David talks about what should happen to these people who put Jesus to death. And he says some pretty terrible things about what should happen to them. Okay, well anyway, let's go ahead and push on here. Jack, you want to read that next verse, just verse 23 and 24?
So it happened in the spring of the year that the army of Syria came up against him, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem and destroyed all the leaders of the people from among the people and sent all their spoil to the king of Damascus. From the army of the Syrians came with a small company of men, but the Lord delivered a very great army into their hand, because they had forsaken the Lord, God of their fathers, so they executed judgment against Joash.
Okay, now isn't that what the prophets had been testifying? And they killed Zechariah. Now, it's hard to know because it ends here in verse 22. You see verse 22 where it says, Joash the king did not remember the kindness. Then it says, it happened in the spring of the year. Is that the same year? Or just in the spring of a year? And I was going back and forth. I finally just let it go. But I thought, you know, wouldn't it be more powerful if it was the same year? But there's just not quite enough there to make that. And so this small company of Syrians comes in, kills all the leaders who had stoned Zechariah, and leaves Joash severely wounded. And then his servants kill him. But they didn't bury him in the tombs of the king. So he was not looked upon with favor because of what he did to the son of Jehoiada. Okay, we'll go ahead and stop there, and we'll pick up next week with our next king. So we're moving right along here. Thanks. Appreciate it.